Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota National Guard, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, and Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Get updates and show information at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Your host is former Command Senior Enlisted Leader for the Minnesota National Guard, retired Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, whether you're listening on a Minnesota station, on our national broadcast, or on your favorite podcast platform, we are glad that you're with us. Today, we're joined by a leader whose work has shaped the lives of many veterans across Minnesota. Neil Loydalt has spent years at the helm of the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, better known as MACV, guiding the organization through some of its most impactful progress in the fight to end veteran homelessness. Neil is preparing to retire in the near future, and before he steps into that next chapter, we're taking some time to look back at his journey, the challenges and the victories along the way, and the legacy he's going to leave behind. Neil, it's a great pleasure and an honor to have you with us on Minnesota Military Radio.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Doug. It's good to be back.
Now, I will just say, you've given me permission to call you Neil. Obviously, it's a little bit weird. I've known you for years as a general in the Minnesota National Guard in your service, and you know, we've had the opportunity to talk about your service before, so I really want to make sure we get the opportunity to focus on MACV because you've played a pretty significant role there. And so if it's all right, I'm going to keep referring to you as Neil throughout the rest of the interview.
Deal.
Awesome. All right, sir. Neil, tell our listeners, those who might not really understand the full scope of what MACV is, the work of it, can you describe kind of that mission, the impact of the organization? Why does MACV exist?
It's pretty simple, actually. I mean, we exist to help veterans exit homelessness and into stable housing. Now, there's a lot of moving parts that are associated with that and 12, 13 probably related services. But at the end of the day, it's about stable housing, because if you don't have a good place to live, it's pretty hard to work on your job or your mental health or anything else that you might have going on that leads to that homelessness. And so getting veterans housed first is our number one priority.
So when you retired from the Minnesota National Guard, I'm sure that you had lots of different things that maybe were in the hopper, different opportunities. But for a reason, in 2017, you decided to take over as the CEO at MACV. And I'm just wondering kind of like what led you to that organization, to the mission and wanting to take on this work in that nonprofit sector?
I just felt like, and I still feel like, that most of us have had struggles and challenges along the way, and a good most of us have had people to help us get back on track. And the population we work with doesn't have that. We are their way to get back on track. And so when I was trying to, you know, figure what the path after the military might be, it occurred to me that if I wanted to be able to actually help or do something with all of those experiences I had when I was serving, it'd be to help people that needed help. And while I could have been perfectly happy at a large corporation, I don't know that they need help. And I'm sure they did just fine without me. Whereas here, I feel like I had an opportunity to make a difference.
And so you stepped into it. You made the decision, obviously, to move into MACV. And, you know, there's always challenges or opportunities or maybe bumps in the road. I don't know what you might want to call it. But when you stepped in and you started looking at the terrain, what did you kind of see immediately were some of those big needs that our Minnesota veterans were seeking? I mean, obviously, homelessness is the thing. But are there other things that you really saw where, hey, we're really not addressing this and we need to start addressing these things?
Well, certainly there are a lot of smaller issues. I think the main thing that I saw in the beginning, which is what has made this a really interesting run for me, is that there was a considerable amount of sort of fighting and squabbling over who's veteran, who's helping which veteran. This is our veteran. This is the VFW's veteran. This is MACV's veteran. This is the state's veteran. And, you know, you're a veteran. I'm a veteran. Angie's a veteran. You don't possess veterans. Right? Like we're people. And so what I have focused on, still have been focusing on, is that we don't do that. You know, $1 that goes to the cause, whether it goes to us or any number of 18 veteran service organizations, is one more dollar to help a veteran. And when we stopped squabbling about that, a lot of other people did. I'm not suggesting I did it. It's just that we weren't doing it anymore, and it made a big difference. And how that relates to the programmatics, which you asked about, is in the beginning, we used to kind of make the veteran participate in figuring out how we were going to pay. you know, based on your status, when you served, you know, what your current condition is relative to, for instance, maybe your financial situation or a conviction. And now we do all that behind the scenes. So that's done by our finance team and our operations team. We work on the housing plan that works for a particular veteran, and then we make it an administrative step to figure out how to pay. And if none of the existing pots of money can pay, well, then I'll go raise some money, which we have done for one veteran at a time on occasion, is just to try to figure out where are we going to come up with $4,300 to get a dangerous pet rider so somebody can keep their bulldog in their current apartment and not have to move to support the pet.
That's very, very interesting. And, you know, you described the squabbling, and I've heard you say it many times, right? The big V, little V, work together, just take care of the veteran, doesn't matter who does it. Is that the thing that really surprised you the most, though, coming into the position, or were there other pieces or bits that were really an eye-opener or a big surprise for you as you started getting into the work?
I think another big surprise was this idea that they really are individual solutions. I mean, we say it a lot. Oh, it's a unique solution. Everybody's got their own solution. But mostly, I think, in life in general, we don't mean that. We mean, you know, there's a lot of solutions, but not everybody gets their own solution. It's pretty much everybody gets their own solution in this work, because how you got where you are and where you are and what it's going to take to get you out of where you are and what it's going to take to keep you in a better spot, that we really do that one veteran at a time. And I didn't appreciate that, because it's very hard to do the things I could do well in the Army, you know, like scale organizations, set budgets, run large missions, if you have to do it times 2,300 veterans a year, right? 2,300 different individual solutions. And that still is the case. It's still a hard thing. It's still a hard thing for me as we try to scale programs to figure out, you know, what is it that we could do here that would work for the majority of people and then still have the ability to help those that don't fit in the majority?
Because I would assume at the end of the day, you want to get the help they need right now, but I can't imagine the goal is to keep them reliant upon you either.
No, it absolutely isn't. And in fact, 85% of the veterans we help through one episode of homelessness. Well, one time back into an apartment or a house, one time with some food insecurity issues, one time with their legal issues, and they're done. 15%, though, don't fit that model, and that's a group that we are always working on, a new way to sustain your rent, a new way to sustain your mental health, a new opportunity for us to be able to help you in a manner that works for you. And that can be, you know, terribly exacting, right, for frontline staff to have to do that.
Now, without getting into the politics of things, you know, there's a hope that Minnesota will become the fourth state to declare the end of veteran homelessness. So, you know, as a state, what do you think? Excuse me. What do you think sets Minnesota apart to being able to address the issue of veteran homelessness?
I think it's a part and parcel of the issue we started talking about, which is, I think we do a pretty good job of trying to come together on the veteran continuum. I think at times, as awkward as this seems for some people, we might be blessed to not have a large military base in the state, because places that have a large military base, then they tend to draw people to that large military base, and there's more infighting over who gets to count everybody. Whereas here, as long as somebody's helping a veteran, all of the partners along the way are pretty happy with it, because then you can help a different group of veterans that you might have a special funding stream for.
Yeah. You know, people are listening right now about, you know, MACV and opinions one way or the other. It doesn't really matter. But what would you want our listeners to know about or understand about MACV, the work that you do, and, of course, the veterans that you serve here in Minnesota?
I think more than anything else, I would want them to know that we are a very transparent, cost-effective organization, and we do help a good majority of the veterans in Minnesota that are working their way out of homelessness. Not all of them, plenty of other good partners, and oftentimes two, three partners helping to do the same thing. But what I would have people understand probably first and foremost is, you know, yeah, we're veterans, but we have the same struggles and challenges as everybody else. There's not a unique set of veteran issues. You know, yeah, maybe if you got your PTSD in Iraq, that's kind of unique. Not everybody gets that. But you can get PTSD fighting fires. You can get PTSD because your dad used to beat you up. You can get PTSD because you got run over on your bike, right? And so if you don't make veterans too special, it's a lot easier to figure out how to help them because you can look and see what's working for other populations. It's when we have this thought that, boy, that has to be a very unique solution because it's only going to work for a veteran. Then we find ourselves back to this idea of we have to squabble over whose veteran it is and whose program gets to help them and who gets the credit.
We have just maybe 30 seconds, but you mentioned about, you know, these tailored approach. Do you share then like those successes with other entities, whether they serve veterans or not, so that they can also be successful in getting after a homeless issue writ large?
We try to. Yeah, we participate in a number of those forums here in Minnesota. We go every year to the National Conference on Homelessness. In fact, it's going to be next week. We always have 4 to 5 individuals from our staff team that are presenters at the national conferences. And so wherever we can provide information, we do.
Awesome. All right, Neil, we're going to take a quick break here. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. In the studio with me from the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, or MACV, is Neil Loydalt, the president and CEO. Neil, hearing a lot of great information about MACV, the mission, and you know what sets you apart. And I kind of want to shift gears a little bit and talk a little bit about you and your role in MACV. And so if you were to look back, you know, to 2017 to now, you know, your time leading MACV, what accomplishments or turning points really stand out to you to make you really realize that what you guys are doing truly is making a lasting impact?
I think I would sort of try to answer that question, Doug, with the use of the calendar. And so for the first couple of 3 years I was there, it was leading up to COVID. Only we didn't know it was leading up to COVID. And so we did some things that made us look lucky, and we were lucky. Like before COVID, we had automated the entire workforce. Everybody had a laptop. Everybody had home access. And because I'm militarily trained, we made people practice.
Nice.
Right? So that they couldn't just say they had home access. And so then we have COVID in 2020, and we don't have to shut the doors. Well, we had to do some things and learn a little bit differently how to use automation to serve veterans from our houses versus from the office. But that worked, you know, and that kept us good till, you know, almost through like 2023, till, let's just say, COVID was completely in the rearview mirror. So we're not picking and choosing at anything. And then at the time, Commissioner Herkey, real insightful commissioner, no doubt, Larry Herkey, he had this idea to get some money from the legislature for housing because there was a population of veterans that just weren't being served. We didn't have enough money to pay for landlords. Landlords wouldn't take some of them. They didn't want to live with traditional landlords. And so for 2 years in a row then, we were fortunate enough to get funding from the state legislature that we used to purchase housing, that we now use to house over 200 veterans that were probably in that category that wouldn't get housing before, which then allowed us to get to the end of chronic and long-term veteran homelessness. So there's nobody on the list for years and years at a time. We had people on the list that had 1,500 consecutive days of homelessness, right? And so we made our way through that just like in the last year or so. And so that's why it's a good time for me to transition. But I think those are three really big muscle moves that helped. We grew along the way. We built more programs. We did a lot of other stuff at the same time. But those were three big things.
Let's talk about programs. You know, obviously, where you started, where you are now, probably look vastly different. So I'm just wondering if there's a particular initiative or a program where you can pinpoint that and say, you know what, that fundamentally changed MACV and our ability to serve veterans?
Well, I think it wasn't a program initially. I think the fundamental change for us that allowed most of this to happen was we started to raise our own money. We didn't do much of that before. Maybe a foundation wanted to give us some money. Maybe, you know, good-hearted people would send in their small checks. But we were not raising anywhere near in the neighborhood of the money we are now. And why that's important is because if you have cash, then you can create new programs. If you don't have any cash, you don't have any flexibility. You got to spend the government's money the way they say. You got to spend the one foundation money the way they say. And even if someone's like, hey, I got this new great idea, well, you know, we're a small nonprofit. You got no way to pay for that. So we kept investing in our fundraising efforts. You know, we don't raise a lot of money, but we raise enough to be able to do that so that along the way, a number of the things we paid cash for the first year or 2 years have now become programs. Programs under the state, programs under the federal government, programs in counties, because they were able to see the viability of it and figure out a way to help us support that financially. And I think that's where it comes from. So it's not that a particular program really saved us from what was going on as much as it did the ability to pay for new programs allowed us to innovate and be where we are today.
And I would imagine that through that process, then you're developing great relationships with entities, and all of a sudden you've got partners that are really stepping up. You know, I just think of things like, you know, out at CHS Field, for example, or out at Target Field, you know, Lennar, I think, is another big one, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, those things didn't just happen.
Right, right. But those are things that were felt a little easier to me because those are things that can be scaled. If you build a good relationship, for instance, with Lennar, with the Minnesota Twins, with the professional sports organizations in Minnesota, you can then figure out how to do more with that relationship. And that's really what we did. We try to always do what we say, right? We do our part. We make good on all of our commitments. And then people see that. And they're like, hey, could we still be partnered with you? Or do you want to do something with our partnership next year? Maybe our partnership is up, but then they introduce us to somebody else, and then we can have a new partnership with somebody else. And, you know, John Lovold, who works for me, John's been on the show before. John likes to get to yes. And he always says the first step in getting the yes is saying yes, right? You can't get the yes if you start with no.
That's correct.
You can't even get the yes if you start with I don't know.
Yeah.
So we say yes a lot, the majority of the time. And every once in a while we say yes and it has to turn out to be a no, or somebody doesn't make good on their part. But for the most part, some of the really, really good relationships that we have now that are making a difference for veterans in Minnesota came from some pretty risky yeses right in the beginning.
I just love that. Just say yes. Let's get to yes. I mean, what a great platform to start from,
right.
You know. Challenges. Over your time, do any challenges, real tough challenges come to mind, things that maybe you – or it forced you to really grow and kind of develop the way you do things?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge is, you know, I'm fortunate in this job. This job isn't that hard. I get to be on the radio. I get to be the speaker at all the big events. I get to deal with donors that give us a lot of money. The real hard work gets done by people on the front line, and that is hard work. I mean, people, veterans transitioning out of homelessness have significant real issues, and the burnout is hard. So it's hard to do that. We're not a big organization. You know, you spend as much time as me in the Army. Army's big. You can move somebody to the left or right and give them a break. Here, you go ahead and have that job.
Take a knee, drink water.
Yeah, have that job for 2 years, and then we'll put you back
in
the fight. Well, we don't have that flexibility. Every once in a while, somebody gets to move up to one of our manager jobs. But otherwise, it's like you are at the front line all day, every day. And I'm not sure that's a challenge I've still figured out. We try to have good benefits. We try to have good morale, welfare stuff. We have goats. Goats come to the office. You can pet the goat, stuff like that. I don't mean to trivialize that because it's very important to people. But that doesn't necessarily stop the burnout.
Yeah.
It makes it a little bit easier, maybe more like a salve or a Band-Aid than a cure for burnout. And I don't know that there can be, because we will always be dealing with these really, really incredibly difficult issues.
And I think part of it is you know, the mission, people getting behind the mission. And they will sacrifice a lot personally when they can get behind something they truly believe in.
Right. But, you know, that's a double-edged sword.
Correct.
Right? Because that's what has you answering the phone then at 8 at night when you were maybe going to try to have no work tonight because you're at softball or whatever. But you see who it is. And you're like, if I don't answer this call from Dave, he's going back off the chain. Right. And so it's a difficult thing for people to balance.
Do you think that there's anything that people still truly misunderstand about veteran homelessness, especially here in Minnesota?
I think that I don't know if it's a misunderstanding or if it's a mindset. The biggest thing that still holds us back, even with people that are good-hearted supporters of us, even with people in organizations, government included, that this is their work, they still don't believe it can get done. Well, have you ever accomplished a thing, Doug, that you didn't think you could get done? And in your heart, I mean?
Right.
You know, not because it was you're not tall enough or something like that. And so, you know, years ago, we changed our mission from we help veterans have a better time in life to we're ending veteran homelessness. And as you mentioned in the beginning, we're pretty much on the cusp of getting there. But it wasn't because we didn't try, and it wasn't because we solely got lucky. It's because every day, whether it's a case manager with 30 veteran cases or if it's someone in our budget office who cuts checks, everybody who works for us believes that we are going to be in a position to effectively end veteran homelessness, and we are. Right. But that mindset, here's where it affects you. That mindset might keep you, if you're a donor, from not donating as much as you wanted to. If you're someone who works in the continuum, it might put you in a position to think, I'm done helping this guy. Never worked before. It's not going to work now. I'm done helping that guy. If you're someone who's, you know, making policy, or if you're a more senior place, you're like, yeah, let's just get rid of that program. What's the big deal? Who's it going to affect?
Right.
And I like to say, if a program helps one veteran, that is the best program in the world for that veteran.
That veteran. Yeah.
So be careful before we say we don't need to do a particular thing anymore if it's already been proven to help some veterans.
That's awesome. Well, this is a great place to take a break, and then we'll talk. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about where you're at, but then more importantly, where you're going as you sunset this phase of your life. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. In the studio with me is the president and CEO of Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, Mr. Neil Leudelt. And Neil, this is our last segment together. We're talking about MACV quite a bit, and you know, just kind of some of your thoughts about the program, things that have changed, challenges, etc. As we set this next segment up, we start talking a little bit about where you're going as you plan to retire. I'm just wondering if you could share how has your position in MACV, how has it changed you personally?
Well, I think it's given me a great deal of empathy that I probably thought I had before, you know, military sort of.
We're a general officer. You weren't supposed to have empathy, were you?
But, you know, empathy on paper, like, yeah. I can relate to the struggles of soldiers in the rain kind of thing. But this has really given me empathy. I mean, when you see how hard people work and still are unable to wrestle their own demons to the ground, it gives you a real appreciation for how good you have it in life, too. And, you know, a lot of us think like, well, I don't know why so-and-so has to be homeless. Why doesn't she just try a little harder? You know, why doesn't he get a job and quit and stop quitting his job? Because that's the way it looks to us, right?
Right.
But their lens doesn't look the same as ours. And so, you know, I learned a little bit of that in law school, like try to see things from the other party's side, but more from crafting an argument and things like that. I try to do that here all the time. We talk about it a lot in meetings, like what does this look like to the veteran we're dealing with? Not what does it look like for us? It doesn't do any good for us to say, well, why? We have veterans that don't want to live in brand new houses. Like, we just finished this house. It's brand new. There's nothing wrong with it. There can't be any bugs in it yet. Can't be any rodents in it yet. None of that. Like, I don't want to live in a new house. Now, you can argue that point, right? Or you can say, well, let's stop trying to jam a brand new house solution on a guy who would really rather live in a small place that he doesn't feel like he has to keep up as much, whatever the case might be. And so you really do, I at least did, had to learn that level of understanding.
Wow, that's very interesting and a great perspective. Can you mention like one thing that you are really most proud of over your time at MACV?
I think it's the team. It's the big team. So it doesn't have to have the name of an individual. I think it's the professionalization of everybody on our team. I think it's our board. You know, our board is significantly more advanced than it was 10 years ago. I think the leaders on our team are significantly better than they were years ago. And so it would be the big team. That's the thing I'm most proud of.
Because you're at the helm, you're the CEO, you know, over the last whatever it's been, 9 years, you know, I know you pass credit on to your team, but at the end of the day, you're the guy, the buck stops with you. When you are thinking about leaving, what is it that gives you the most confidence about leaving MACV and knowing what its future is after you step aside?
Well, I don't need to repeat the answer. I think it's the last answer I just gave you. Because we do have a good team.
Yeah.
I'm just one part of it, and you can pull all apart, and somebody else will get that job. And it'll be different, but it'll be the same or better. Hopefully it'll be better. You know, we always want things to be better after transitions, but we don't have this thing cobbled together on a shoestring. You know, it runs pretty well. Now, we have our issues, sure, because if you don't have big issues, you'll just have little issues that feel like big issues.
Right.
There's just so many issues that exist in any organization, no matter which one it is. And so that's why I'm not terribly concerned whatsoever. about who gets hired to replace me, because the whole rest of the team is still going to be there and they'll keep doing what they've been doing.
And of course, you know, the board has a vote and the team that you highly speak of has a vote about the things that continue once you're gone. But is there anything that, you know, when you look at what's going on right now where you're like, hey, these couple of things, these things have to keep going. These initiatives are too important that this is kind of our lifeline, so to speak.
Yeah, I think what has to continue is we can't get off mission. We have to understand that this is what we do. We help veterans out of homelessness. We are also not a mental health organization. No, we're not also that. We're not also builders. We might do a little bit of that because we need to. And I say these things because these are things that have been brought to us. Oh, you could hire a bunch of nurses. Maybe we could, but that'll be in the way of what we're trying to do. And there are other organizations that do that. And so I think staying focused on the mission is the most important thing that we can do. And then secondarily, it's ensuring, and it sounds so easy to say, but it's ensuring that you keep the resources aligned behind the mission.
Yeah.
You know, especially when it's going well, it's easy to think let's go play around on the left or the right. Well, let's cut that program and see how long before anybody notices, right? Those are stupid decisions. You don't make those in a good organization. You understand that the best programs probably run quietly behind the scenes, achieving the results that they were intended to achieve. And it's for that reason that you keep them, not that you try to figure out how to get rid of them.
And there's no doubt that you can demonstrate what you have achieved.
Correct.
I mean, the results are there without question. I know that you generally don't like to talk about yourself. You give credit to the team, but you're going to go on and someone else is going to step in, and the organization may or may not remember who Neil Loydalt is. But if you were just to look back, what would you hope that your legacy will be within MACV and within that broader community of veterans that you have served for so many years?
Well, because I believe that a new leader is going to allow a sharper pivot into prevention, prevention of homelessness, right, than probably I would have been able to do because of 9 years of working through, you know, the rapid housing portion of that. I would want, if anybody was going to remember a thing about me, I would want them to remember that, you know, when I started, we had 30 people and a small budget, and we were turning away as many veterans as we were helping, to when I left, we have 120 people and a significantly larger budget, and we are rarely, rarely turning away a veteran. We certainly aren't turning away a veteran we've never met before. And so if we are, it's because we still don't have the right solution for you and you don't want to hang out with us anymore. And so we're just having a pause from you. But we are not saying no to veterans when it comes to find the thing they need the most.
Yeah, awesome. What message would you want to share with Minnesota veterans and the community that supports them as you close out this chapter of your life?
Well, I would want to share with them that they should all be proud of how they've helped us along the way, but to understand that we can't quit the help. I mean, 43 new veterans a month enter the homeless continuum. So even if we do all of the best work we possibly can do, Doug, even if all the veterans leave the registry, even if everybody that we knew in May, right, gets a house, in June we're going to have 43 new people that something happened to them in their life and that they're homeless again. And so while we maybe don't need the same size of a response, we still need to have a response. And that's what's built into the criteria that's designed to, you know, effectively end veteran homelessness. That's what that's all about. We don't close emergency rooms because we don't have patients for a couple nights in a row.
Right.
We realize somebody's going to fall out of a tree, somebody's going to hit by a car, baseball's going to carry them off, and somebody's got to go to the emergency room. So we scale them down. We make sure they're as efficient as possible. We don't close them, and we can't afford to close the homelessness response system, not for veterans, not for anybody.
Awesome. All right. What's next for you, sir? What does life look like afterwards?
Yeah, so I like to farm, so I drive tractor a little bit. I got a grandson. He's 10 months old, so maybe I'll sign up for one day a week watching the grandson. I'm trying.
Sam, are you listening?
Yeah, and he's probably not, but you know, maybe I'll do a little consulting if that works, and if it doesn't work, that's fine too. And then if I really find myself with a need to do something, I'll just go back to what I'm doing here. I don't mean running McAfee. I mean volunteering or helping people some other place in the continuum.
Yeah, having a grandkid's awesome, isn't it?
It's pretty good. Yeah, yeah, you bet. I mean,
10 months old.
Yep.
Yeah. Mine will be just about 2 here in August, and we have a 15-year-old too, and it's the best part of my life.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty hard to have a bad day.
No.
If you started out, you know, snuggling a baby.
Oh, God, yeah. The little one's coming over tonight to spend 2 nights with Papa. That's going to be a good time. Neil, General, Sir, this has been great, and it's been great watching you. What you've done with this organization. Just want to say thank you so much for what you've done for our Minnesota veterans. Want you to know how much I appreciate you, how much we all appreciate you, and I just wish you the best of luck as you move on to that next chapter of your life.
Thanks, Doug. Appreciate it.
Awesome. That is Neil Loydalt, the president and CEO of Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. In the final segment today, we're going to talk about the 13th annual Salute to Service Women's Golf Classic. And joining me in the studio to talk about that is Angela Stewart Randall. Angie serves as a secretary on McAfee's board of directors. She joined the board in May of 2022, retired from the Minnesota National Guard at the rank of colonel. So, Angie, Colonel, ma'am, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
All right, so you just had 3 segments of Mr. Neil Loydalt in there. I know he gave you great advice about how this thing works, so I'm sure that you're ready to go. And so let's get right into it. Let's talk a little bit about, for our listeners' sake, maybe someone isn't familiar with what the Salute to Service Women's Charity Classic, Golf Classic is. Talk about it, and why is this event important to you and to the McAfee community?
This event is important. It's more than just a day on the golf course. It's a community that's coming together, women, men, all service members that are just coming together to support women veterans across Minnesota. And it's one of the things that we do, as you mentioned, Neil has stated, with McAfee, their mission is to stabilize housing and long-term stability. So we're looking for everyone to come out, participate in this event, experience golf, a day on the golf course with another veteran, whether it's male or female. We're focusing in on the females because sometimes they're missed or not seen, and we just want to make sure that they are seen.
Yeah, I wanted to really touch on that piece, right, because it's in the title, right, the Salute to Service Women Golf Classic, but, you know, it's open to men too, but we're focusing on women. And so maybe you can talk a little bit about why do you think it is important to really specifically honor the women who have served, you know, and why do we have that focus for the day?
We want to focus on women because, like I said, sometimes they're seen, not seen, they're invisible. But women, we are also soldiers. As you stated, I got the rank of colonel in that, which I'm very pleased and very honored to have done. But our women soldiers have been there from the start, from every war that we have had. They have been on the battlefield, whether it was the wife of a service member that was fighting or bringing water or whatever the case may be. Nurses that were going over in World War I, they were going over, women were going over into those battles on their own dime. They weren't recognized. They had to have their own housing, their own medical, but they were still there. When we became military women, that we were able to wear the uniform and be recognized in that, we're still not recognized out in the community. I and my friends will be going on Veterans Day and sitting at the table. We'll have one male with us, yeah. And that male is the only one that gets, you know, attention or focus or thank you for your service. And rightfully so, they will say, hey, these women served with me.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, we're invisible.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I hear that story all the time about a husband and wife team go out where it is the wife was the service member or is the service member, and it's a direction to the male. It's just kind of a I don't know if I'd call it a societal thing, but maybe that's what it is, right? Because that was kind of common. Because what is it? Maybe 15 or 20% of service members might be female, maybe a little bit larger in the Air Force or something. But so let's talk a little bit about how this event supports MACV, right? So, you know, it's a golf event. So it's a fundraiser. You're raising funds. How do the funds get spent? Where do they go?
Everything we do is for MACV and it's about the impact that it will be. So the money that is raised here will go back and be invested, but it's going to be specifically targeted to the women veterans in service. So we want to make sure that everything we do is real, it's tangible, and it's helpful, and going to be making a true impact for our veterans service members, or especially our female members.
You mentioned the misconception of going to a restaurant, for example, on Veterans Day and somebody saying, you know, to the male person about thanking for their service. But are there any other misunderstandings that you can think of or challenges maybe that our women veterans face? Anything that you would want to bring up?
Anything that has been misunderstood? I think that would be the biggest, is that we're still not seen as a veteran. Whether it's when you look at Veterans Day or Memorial Day, or you look out and to the vast of our community, you'll pass people. And many times, even when a female veteran, women veteran is wearing their hat, they're still overlooked with their male counterparts. So I think that's the most thing that really is misunderstood, is that we are veterans. We've served, and the instability of that sometimes can have real consequences to some of our female vets. Our female vets have higher rates of instability within housing. They, with military sexual trauma, they're often just seen less to be able to self-identity. Many times I just remember when I came into the military, one of the things that I did not want to be called female. A female soldier. I was a soldier. And as I started getting up in age and then recognizing that, hey, I am female, that's my gender, and I am a female soldier. And we want our women veterans, our female veterans, to be able to identify with that, and people, our service members all across the board, to be able to recognize that.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure that if Neil was still on the radio here with us, and I would imagine even in your service, you know, you would say that, and I will say it from my positions that I've held, is I've worked with, served with some female soldiers that will outdo many of the male soldiers that I worked with. And, you know, and so I think if we can get past that male-female thing, I like to address as soldiers, but we have to acknowledge there is a difference, right? But there's a different set of skills that many women can bring to the table that men just can't. And I think it's important. I think that's what really makes us successful.
I think working together as a team has made us successful.
Yeah.
As an organization. And we need the female counterpart in our ranks to be able to continue that.
So we're going to run out of time here. We've got just over 2 minutes. Let's talk about the tournament again just a little bit more. Anything new this year? Is there something cool and exciting coming up that people might be able to expect when they get out on the golf course? Like at hole number 7, is Neil Loydalt selling Jell-O shots or something like that?
We do have a number of activities at various different holes. We have a pro golfer that people can engage in if they want to be able to kind of help their game for those that are looking out for a win. But just come out and look for an exciting time. We do have things along the golf course. We'll have an opportunity to, again, it's a fundraising event. So purchase a golf course, a golf club, or a golf cart, excuse me, and be able to ride around in whatever theme that is. We haven't selected those two themes, but there'll be two. And if you're not a golfer, as I'm not a golfer, but that's a day that I get out there and swing a club. It's best ball, so you're in a group effort, and that's the whole idea of the whole day, is to be able to just come together, camaraderie, be able to just enjoy each other's company and make a little money for MACV.
So, you know, all right, maybe they're not a golfer. Maybe they can't attend the event for whatever reason. Is there any other way in which they can support the event and make a good impact with you and get after the things you're trying to accomplish?
Yes, please go to the MACVIE website. There's an opportunity, if you're not a golfer, to be able to sponsor those golfers. We have a number of different types of ways that you can sponsor the event. But if you're not able to come out for the day and just want to be able to join us for that evening, you can also just join us for the evening as well at the banquet.
So here's what I'm tracking. June 11th from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. I would imagine be there early, right? You got to get checked in and all that kind of stuff. But go out to the MACVIE website. They get all the information there about how to sign up, register for the Women's Salute to Service.
Yeah, so registration starts at 10 o'clock, and then we have this golf tournament starts at noon.
Ah, gotcha. Okay, so come for the fun and have a great time.
Thank
all
you.
Right, well, we are going to run out of time here, and Angie, great job. I'm sure that Neil will give you the stamp of approval. I appreciate you coming into Minnesota Military Radio and spending time with us.
All right, thank you so much.
All right, don't forget about the 13th Annual Salute to Service Women's Golf Classic. It's June 11th. Thank you for tuning in to Minnesota Military Radio. We appreciate your support, and we work hard to bring you meaningful, informative conversations each and every week. We always welcome your feedback and guest suggestions. Just visit MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, click on Contact Us. You can also catch up on past shows through the Minnesota Military Radio podcast, wherever it is that you listen, and of course on MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Another plug for the 13th Annual Salute to Service Women's Golf Classic. It's on June 11th from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Go out to the MACVIE website. You'll be able to get more information there. Be sure to tune in next week when we check in with the Eagle Group of Minnesota. I'm Doug Wortham, your host on Minnesota Military Radio. Have a productive week, and please take a moment to thank and honor those who have served and those who continue to serve and sacrifice so we can all enjoy the liberty and freedom this great country has to offer.